Hello, everyone.
I hope everyone's doing well. Thank you for that reminder and the text. So the shiur tonight I wanted to start was a collaboration of a few different ideas from a few different people. First of all, Reno wanted kashrus for a while. And Basi had an idea to combine both of those ideas, which is really relevant and a good springboard to the time of the year that we are approaching, which is Pesach, which is in some ways really the opening to kashrus. So much of the kashrus that we learn about and that we adhere to is so relevant to Pesach and also not relevant to Pesach. But you have the ability to really model and learn a lot of the details and a lot of the halachos that we run into in terms of the basics of kashrus by comparing and contrasting it to what is relevant and what is not relevant to Pesach. I find it very difficult sometimes, you know, when you go through halacha and you just have a list of do's and don'ts, and you just have a list of this is what we do regularly, and this is what we do Pesach time. It's very difficult to navigate. First of all, it doesn't give credence, and it doesn't show you the beauty of our rabbis and the Chazal and the system and the halachic process, that everything really makes sense. Everything really fits together, and it's all part of a larger puzzle. And it's sometimes easier to navigate it from the conceptual standpoints. And then we can get to some of the details. And some of the details will be, that's just, you know, minig, that's chumra de Pesach, you know, that's just accept it. But a lot of times it's more systematic and it makes sense from a conceptual standpoint as well. Again, I just, anyone who has any questions, we'll try to save some time for questions. I want to get through some of the basics of kashrus, some of the fundamental, we're not going to cover all of kashrus. We'll have to, leave that for another time in this series. We'll try to cover some of the important halachos relevant to kashrus and how it relates to Pesach. And then hopefully, as the shiurim go on, if Mirtz Hashem, we have time, we'll be able to speak specifically about all the nuances and specific differences this year, Pesach, and how it's different because of the day it falls out on. Okay, but if anyone has any questions, please feel free to stop me, and let's get moving. So one of the most important halachos and things that you learn about when you start Hilchos Kashrus is the concept of a taruvis. A taruvis is a mixture, and whenever you have, you know, something that happened accidentally, And without you realizing, some sort of ingredient or whatever it is, or whatever some sort of the other item fell in that would be a shiloh that we would normally have. So the first thing that we have to realize is that it's not necessarily the end of the story, and we don't always notice this. But Chazal developed for us a concept called bittel. Chazal developed to us a concept called holchin achar arov, that we can follow the majority, just like when it comes to adjudication in Bezdin. So we follow the majority opinion. So what's fascinating is that that's actually the proof. We learn the halachos of the kitchen from the halachos of Bezdin. In Yiddishkeit, it's all one package. The dinim and the rov that's going on in an adjudication process is also the source for the following the rov in Hilchos Kashrus, when you have not 10 stores in front of you and you're going to take one meat from it. So that's also learned out from that same type of rov. And that same type of rov is also what's going on in your pot. And if there is a certain ratio of heter against iser, so that is what we call, and we're all familiar with, the concept called bittel b'shishim. Now, even though when it comes to a Bezdin, when it comes to in general majority, it's not necessary to have shishim, which would be 60 times the amount of iser. In kashrus, it's necessary to have that because of a halacha called tam, that any time there is a taste, then that has the ability to prohibit and aser up anything else that's in its surrounding area that it could potentially give off taste to that item. So if you have iser that fell into a mixture, and there isn't 60 times heter going against the iser, so then Chazal assumed, and Chazal, wherever their source was, we're not going to get into that right now, but Chazal had a mesorah that they understood that less than 60, you know, 1 in 59 is going to be potent enough to give off taste. So that's very, right off the bat, whenever you have a shaila, the first thing a Rav should ask you is, well, what's the story over here? How big was the pot? How much was inside the ratio that maybe it's not necessarily going to be a problem? Now, that's not always going to solve the issue. As we've spoken about in other shiurim, there might be certain type of isurim that don't lend itself to bittul, number one. Number two, more importantly, there might be certain strong, potent ingredients that that are, at the end of the day, going to stand out and shine and be recognizable even above and beyond past the ratio of 60. Or you'll have something that is crucial for the taruvis, for the mixture, that is what's called in halacha a davar hamaimid. Its potency, its effect is something that's going to be, even if it's just a 0.00001% ingredient in this item, this is something that its strength and its effect is always going to be there. Otherwise, the item will spoil, or otherwise the item will go bad. Let's say, you know, in halacha, you have something like, in the kashrus organizations, you have something like an emulsifier in chocolate milk. If you have the emulsifier that's treif, even though the amount of the item that's actually in there is much less than 1 in 60, but if that's a davar amaimid, so then that's not going to lend itself to bittul. But in a normal situation, if you have whatever it is, I don't know, a little drop of milk that fell into a whole thing of meatball or a thing of cholin, so the first thing is don't go crazy, don't get nervous. First thing the Rav should figure out is maybe this is not going to be necessarily treif. Maybe there can actually be some milk in here that's not necessarily going to have an effect because it's not noisein tam. And as long as it's not noisein tam, so then there's no tarfus issue in a mixture. If you would have treif, mamish, that's not in a mixture in front of you to eat that, that would be a problem. But since it's in the context of a mixture, so therefore we can say it's batel berov, it's batel b'shisha. Now, we're not going to have time to go into this. This really requires a series on its own, for sure, a shir on its own. But this is obviously restricted to something that happens, you know, b'dieved. This is something that happens, oops, whoopsie, you know, I didn't intend to do this. If a person takes iser and they put it l'chadchila, so on a level of d'oraisa, on a biblical level, I really can't prohibit that, such an item. Because at the end of the day, Rabbi, there's no ratio here. It's not no same time. What's my problem? You know, you wanna be shticky, you go to the right. Look, Rabbi, I'm dropping, you know, a little bit of milk inside there. Technically, I can't tell you that that's usser. Yeah, but Chazal said that you can't rely on bittul lichadchila. You can only rely on bittul b'dieved. And that's the halacha called emevat l'nisr lichadchila, that we not only tell you that you can't do it, but Chazal say that you have a knas, that if a person does it, the food all becomes usser. You know, Chazal did not take that lightly. You start playing games in halacha, Chazal gave a penalty, and they prohibited the food. Good. So that's just in terms of a little bit of background, which I'm sure we're very familiar with, in terms of the halacha of rov, not rov, but bittul b'shishim, when it comes to mixtures, when it comes to our pots, and a lot of these situations that we find ourselves. However, just right off the bat, the halachos of kashrus that are so fundamentally based on taruvis and based on the ratios, suddenly enter into Pesach, boom, doesn't exist. Doesn't apply. Why? That's what's called in halacha, chametz aser b'mashu. When it comes to Pesach, you have a crumb. You have a mashu, like I just said, chametz aser b'mashu. You have a nothing, according to the Shulchan Aruch, according to the halacha, there was one opinion of the Rabbeinu Tam that might have been makel on this shaila. I'm not going to get into that now because it was not even accepted. It's used as a sniff, you know, in like a pandemic year, you know, like you need to pile on the kulas, like, you know, come up with heterim that we never even dreamt of heterim, you know, because we had such a difficult predicament, you know, so perhaps you can throw that in. But the general consensus of the poskim is to the following concept that chametz is aser b'mashu. What does that mean, chametz aser b'mashu? It means there's no ratios. Means we don't care about the size of the mixture. We don't care size about the size of the amount of permissibility and what's mutter and what's usser. If there is some chametz inside that mixture, that prohibits your entire food. Bittul b'shishim is thrown out the window. Okay, you could have 1,000. You could have more. It's always going to be usser. Why should that be? What's the rationale for that? What happened to the din of Shishim, what happened to this concept that is so fundamental to the rest of the year? Hilchos Kashrus will be so laxed if even, it's honestly, you know, it sounds like a lot when we talk about 1 in 60, it's not so much, and it's very likely, it's more common than people think, that, you know, you have a little bit of Isser, a lot of times you're going to have Bittul B'Shishim, you know, in such a... It is more common than not, but when it comes to Pesach, not. So this was a very big debate amongst the Rishonim. What is the reason for our stringency that when it comes to chametz that we have to be more strict, and no matter even a crumb that falls in, or even a drop that falls in that's chametz is going to be aser b'mashu. So some Rishonim explained it's because a chumra dekaris, since chametz carries on it the chumra of karis, so therefore we were more machmir when it comes to Pesach. It's interesting because not necessarily are we machmir by all chive krisis, and there are other isurim that carry the karis, but for some reason Chazal thought that when it came to this isur, which I guess was not only that it's karis, and it's also very common that, you know, some of the Rishonim say it's lo badili mine. You know, this is something that a piece of bread that tonight, if I would have a sandwich, that's something that's totally normal to have around in the house. We have to make sure to protect ourselves from something that's so natural and so common to find in the house and on our tables, so therefore we have to protect ourselves. Or it might be for an entirely different reason. The Rambam has a totally different analysis of why chametz is aser b'mashu. The Rambam tells us that the reason is because of a reason that I think we might have spoken about this in the past. I don't remember, but it's an overarching principle that says that that an iser, that is what's called a davar sheyesh lo matirin, something that has a foreseeable permissibility in the future, does not lend itself to bittul. Let me give an example. The Gemara talks about in Maseches Beitza, the Gemara talks about mukta. Mukta falls into your mixture. The Gemara happened to be of talking about a situation of wood, that on Yontif we are allowed to light the wood, and we're allowed to, and you have to try to envision a time when Yontif was totally about wood, that all the heat and everything that was existing was generated from the fire and the wood. So the Gemara talks about you have wood that was usable on Yontif as opposed to Shabbos. The wood is not mukta on Yontif, but then you have certain wood that fell in that was mukta, that wasn't set aside before Shabbos, and therefore it had an iser mukta. And this wood fell into the taruvis, to the mixture of the other wood. So the Gemara says you can't be mevatel it. You can't rely on bittul over here. The Gemara says because this is a davar sheyesh lo matirin. This is something that if you wait a little bit of time, this has a foreseeable heter, this has a potential heter in the future. Chazal never relied on bittul, on nullification, when it came to something that was going to be mutter based on time. So comes along the Rambam, and the Rambam says, hey, wait a second, chametz is very similar. Okay, it's not mutter immediately, it's not mutter in the next 24 hours like Shabbos or Yontif, but it's going to be mutter after Pesach. It's a davar sheyesh lo matirin. So it comes along the Rambam, and the Rambam says that's the reason that there's not going to be bittul, and that chametz carries astringency that bittul, it doesn't lend itself to bittul when it comes to our mixtures on Pesach. So now, what's the difference? So there's a big difference between the Rambam and the Shita of the Rosh. What happens if the Isser falls in at a time that it's not Karis yet? Who can tell me a time that Chametz is Aser, but it's not necessarily Karis?
After Chatzos.
Excellent. After Chatzos. Erev Pesach is a fascinating time. From the night of Bdikas Chametz to the night of Leil HaSeder, I mean, there's a lot happening in the spiritual air. There's things that are there's doors that are opening and closing, and a lot is transforming in halacha, from an iser to eat matzah to an iser to eat chametz to an iser midrabbanan to an iser d'oraisa to an iser to eat, but I can still feed my dog, but I can't feed my dog after chatzos. And then, yes, but that's true. And that some of those Yisurim are rabbinic and some of those Yisurim are biblical. But if you want to know when the real McCoy, when the real Isser Karis, the real, you know, real stringent Isser that is associated with Pesach, of Chametz, to eat Chametz, to be Chayav Karis, that only kicks in at the night of the Seder. That only kicks in once Shkia happens, say it's nightfall of Leil HaSeder, that's when the Karis kicks in. Ah, so fascinating. So now I have a big Shaila, and if you think these Shailas don't come up, they have come up. Let's say I have a chametzdik ingredient or a chametzdik crumb that fell into a mixture, on Erev Pesach. Does the Isser of Chametz Aser Mashu apply on Erev Pesach? Or does the Isser of Chametz Mashu, the Chumra of Chametz Aser Mashu, only apply it when I'm cooking on Pesach? So we happen to be lenient about that issue, and we hold that the Chumra kicks in once the actual Yontif starts, even though technically you're not allowed to eat Chametz, like was pointed out beforehand, you're not allowed to eat regular Chametz even at an earlier stage already from midday on Erev Pesach. So that's just already, just what we usually associate, just off the bat, what we usually associate to be one of the classic heterim and one of the classic fundamental rules of Hilchos Kashrus is it depends how much fell in, what's the ratio, that doesn't always apply, and that's not going to be applicable when it comes to the Yontif of Pesach. But that really lends myself, carries me into another much more classic Shaila, which I really want to talk about because I think it's important to recognize this and understand the system as well, referring to this this issue. Another common Hilchos Kashrus leniency that when you have a Shaila, often, and I'm not going to go through all the cases that this doesn't apply, so it's always important and better safe than sorry to always ask, but fundamentally, we need to learn to speak about this halacha, that if you use certain vessels, right, if you use certain vessels that haven't been used in the past 24 hours, so that's going to create a leniency in terms of affecting your treif status on the item or the opposite item that you're using. It doesn't necessarily have to deal with opposite or milchik and fleishik per se. It has to do with a treif vessel as well. The halacha is that when it comes to a treif, and when it comes to what the Torah says, Nevela ha-re'uya lager, the Gemara says that you can give a nevela to a ger. The Torah says, lager titnenu. So the Gemara has a drasha. The Gemara learns, nevela ha-re'uya lager kare nevela. Nevela she'enu re'uya lager eno kare nevela. If you have a piece of iser, a piece of treif, that is somehow decomposed already. It's not in its original form. It already began to spoil. And this is not something that any of the goyim are going to pay money for, and that they're interested in. This is already nevela she'enu re'uya lager. So that's already considered, you know, in a royal achila, and that's something that will automatically remove the biblical isser on such an item when you're eating it. So that applies to eating a nevela straight up. But the Chazal understood that not only is nevela shenenerulyager an item that starts already decomposing, starts to spoil, that you're not going to be obligated on a biblical level. It might be us or on a rabbinic level, but on a biblical level, we can't consider you now eating non-kosher if it's already in its decomposed, if it's in its spoiled status. But now, Kamal and Chazal, and they said also, if it gives off taste, let's say that item fell into a mixture, and now what's it giving off? It's giving off a foul taste. It's giving off something that's no Saint Tom Lifgam. That's not a good taste. That's not being mashbiach. That's not really helping and assisting and enhancing my taruvis and my mixture. So Chazal learns from that din of Eina Rui Leger that not only is the actual item not any more treif to eat it, but also when it's giving off Tam Pogum, we only say Nesinas Tam, we only say that Tam that we've been speaking about, that taste that it could affect in a taruvus, in a mixture, in another item, a kosher food that it's now giving off taste into, is only if it's no Saint Tam Lishvach. It's only if it's enhancing the mixture that it finds itself with. But if it's no Saint Tam Lifgam, if it's giving off bad taste, so then that's not going to be something that we would prohibit on a biblical level. So came along Chazal and they said, you know what? We can take this one step further. Not only is Nevela she'enu leger, not classic nevela that you'd be chaya for, not only is the taste and the you know and the moisture or whatever it's giving off in the mixture, whatever concoction you're talking about, is that not considered tam that's going to aser and prohibit the whole food? But it came along Chazal and they said the same is true. No sin tam lefgam also applies to a taste that's absorbed in the pots, pans, forks, knives, spoons, vessels that I'm using. After a certain amount of time, that the taste that was absorbed inside our vessels, that was absorbed inside our kelim, are no longer, you know, fresh, came along Chazal and they extended that din of no sin tam lefgam. And they said, that's not really going to affect the food that's being cooked in that as well. That is one of the greatest leniencies that we have. Because a lot of times, I'm sure all of you have experienced this, that you were saved and your entire meal or your entire dish that you were working on were saved because of this concept. That it's no sein tam lifgam. That even though, oh my gosh, your husband brought out the wrong pot, you know, went to the right side instead of the left side, and you know, and you didn't realize that they were the same color, and he didn't realize, and thank God, it's Baruch Hashem most of the time, still okay because it's after a certain period of time. Now, how long is that period of time? So as I'm sure many of you know, we assume that that's a 24-hour period. Happens to be, you know, just another shout-out for the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam happens to have held that it wasn't necessarily only 24 hours. Rabbeinu Tam said it depends if the taste slept over the night inside the vessel. Linas Laila, it was already expired over a night. So then that is going to be already not no Saint Tam Lishvach, that's not going to be a fresh taste that's going to affect anything in the morning. The reason why I mention that is not only to give a shout out for the Rabbeinu Tam, there are people in this room right here that in Pesach's prior have been saved by this Rabbeinu Tam for situations where the vessel wasn't necessarily turned off and not used pre-24 hours before the kashering status. So, but I'm jumping ahead. But we'll see that what that Rabbeinu Tam, and you'll see how it's going to be relevant. And sometimes even a shita that we don't paskin like can really help us when we're in the crunch. But obviously no one should rely on that lechatchila. But let's go back to what I'm sorry. So now just back to the fundamentals. So in the normal situation, in a normal year, so I'm using a vessel. Again, fundamentally, a vessel has what's called blias. A vessel is bolea. Bolea means that it absorbs, it swallows, it can definitely be affected by the item that was previously cooked in it. And if you would immediately cook with that kli, then in certain situations, that could be a very serious issue because of the absorptions of the blios that exist in that vessel. However, if the item was not used for the past 24 hours, so then once the item is going to be used, then we say that's not going to have an effect on the food afterwards, and therefore it's going to be mutter. So it's like a little bit of a breath of fresh air and a little bit of a sigh of a relief that thank God we have this halacha that we could always rely on, that if it's goofed, you know, a lot of times, Baruch Hashem, it's already an eino ben yomo, as we are familiar with. It's already post the expiration. We assume usually that that's 24 hours, and then hasn't been used within 24 hours, and therefore it's not going to affect the next food that you used it with. Okay? Now, the question is, 1 second, let me just finish. The question is, so then why do I ever have to kasher kelim? Was that your question? Okay. But if anyone might have that question, so the Gemara raises that question. The Gemara says, if once it's an eino ben yomo, right, it's already going to expire and it's going to be mutter on a level of deoraisa, so what's the problem? So to that, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah answers the question. You're right. On a level of deoraisa, you should never need to kasher any of your vessels. It's post 24 hours. It's totally decomposed. It's totally gone. It's totally ineffective on the. It can't affect the next cooking process because it's post whatever the expiration date is. However, Chazal made a gzeira. It's a bad policy, bad protocol inside your kitchen. Gzeira eino ben yomo, atu ben yomo. We make a gzeira if people are going to now start and think that they can use a vessel after 24 hours. So then they're not going to kasher, and they're going to use even within 24 hours, and that's going to be a bad policy. So therefore, even after 24 hours, we still make sure that if it's treif, that you kasher it first, and that you don't use it right away. Yeah, Basia.
Sorry. Actually, two questions now. When you're saying this whole discussion, you're talking about something that was treif, or like going milchik to fleishik, fleishik to milchik?
So let's talk about treif first. Milchik to fleishik, we didn't learn enough background, but in theory, it would be the same thing in terms of what I spoke about. There might be other, the reason why I didn't say, I didn't respond an absolute yes to you. Everything that we said does apply on some level to milchiks and fleishiks. There might be a little bit of more to rely on when it comes to milchiks and fleishiks, but we didn't really learn that background. That's what's called not bar not, and because milchiks and fleishiks, there's something unique about it that it's not really usser yet, right? It didn't become usser. All it had was it was used for something mutter. It's just like, whoa, just stay away from that when you're dealing with this. So that might have other permissibilities that we have to really build up to get to. But in terms of taste for no santam levgam, that applies to milks and fleishiks also. So that logic would definitely apply. Yeah.
So if you have let's say something fleishik that was eino ben yomo, and now you want to use it again, does that whatever you're making, let's say it's parv? Can that be parv lechatchila, or are you still supposed to consider it like
so equipment? This is exactly what not bar not is. Both of your questions are on the same topic. So the answer is lechatchila not, b'dieved yes. But I think it'll be clearer once we get to all the dinim of not bar not, and then we plug it into Hilchos Pesach. So I'm a little bit staying away from milchus and fleishiks because because we're going to get to it afterwards. So let's talk about treif right now. So now, when it comes to the level of d'oraisa, because again, why do I want to talk about the level of d'oraisa? Rabbi, if you're telling me I can't use the vessel, why is this helpful? Because vessel's only half the story. You know, half the time that the pot is only half the story. I might tell you, often, kasha the pot, kasha the spoon, kasha the item, but thank God, the food for Shabbos is good. The food for Shabbos is unaffected. You can take care of this on Sunday. You can take care of this on Matzah Shabbos. But the food is salvaged. The food is still good because it doesn't have the ability on the level of D'oraisa, and there wasn't actual taste here that's going to actually affect the food. So how does that work? What are the mechanics of the taste not being able to affect the item? So there are really two ways a person can approach that. One way is to say, similar to what I was saying, things spoil. Things spoil. Just like the actual piece of nevela, Chazal say, nevela ruuya lager kari nevela. If it's not nevela ruuya lager, so then it's not going to be considered a nevela, which by the way, we have to get to, but that concept of nevela shena ruuya lager, that once it's totally decomposed, it's totally disgusting, it's not an edible food, that's already a permissibility on a level of the d'oraisa to eat, that's going to be a lot of the heterim for your medications. Why is it that suddenly there's an ingredient in my medication that's going to, you know, be treif, and suddenly the rabbi's saying, oh, you could eat that, no problem. Where'd that come from? The answer is because it's not a nevela anymore. It's a nevela she'ena ru'i leger. And, okay, you're not allowed to eat such a thing. Rabbi said it's bad policy, midrabanan, to now ingest it. But Rav Moshe Feinstein said if a person's taking it as a pill, if a person's swallowing it and they're taking it for medicinal reasons, that's not something that's now going to revive any prohibition. So fundamentally, if you want to know why is it mutter for me to have this pill that's not kosher, what's going on with all these leniencies, the answer is the halacha that we're learning. Just like a spoiled piece of nevela, a spoiled piece of chazer, so too a spoiled pharmaceutical company. And what happens in the pharmaceutical company to a drug? That's going to affect it, and that's not going to be revived on a level of derabanan, and it's going to stay permissible because of that heter of nevela shena ruuya lager. So now, when I go all the way to the extension, to the pot, that now I'm saying, it's past 24 hours. So what's how does that work? Is the logic that, yeah, just like it became decomposed on its own, so now it's also, we look at it like the Rashba's language is, it's like it's dust. It's like it's totally gone. It's totally decomposed. And that type of item has no ability to aser and to prohibit anything that's cooking now post 24 hours into the pot that now is accepting this absorption. Or do you say, no, that's not exactly the way it's working? The Ran says, no, that's not the way it's working. The Ran says, it's still around. The taste is still in existence, but it's never going to be a problem. You know why? Because by definition, when you're going to be cooking another dish, and that blia, that taste, that absorption is going to come out, so there's going to be a bittel, there's going to be an automatic nullification that exists once it exits from the walls of the vessel into the new item that you're tasting. And that new taste that's coming out of the walls will never have the ability to prohibit the next item. And that's why we can be lenient and we can say, oh, no seitan lifgam, don't worry about the kli, the vessel, the pot, the knife, it's eino ben yomo, and therefore it's going to be mutter. So now, what I basically set up for you is that there's two different arguments amongst the rabbis, amongst the Rishonim, why is this permissible? Is it because it's non-existent? Is it because it's like dust? Is it because it's just not food anymore? Or is it because, no, there is taste there, but by definition, when it comes in and when it enters into the new food, it's going to be nullified, it's going to be batel. So there could be a tremendous implication when it comes to this issue. What is that? So the Prima Gadim points out, he says, well, that's going to affect our Pesach. If the logic of a vessel that's Enu Ben Yomo, that's post 24 hours, is only permissible because it's nullified and because it's relying on the regular rules and regulations that we started off with. The dinim of what? Of bittul. That also, on some level, is in existence when it comes to a vessel that's post the expiration period, the post the 24-hour period. That's what's going to affect this food. So then that's not going to be permissible on Pesach. And now, wow, now you're going to have a situation as follows. Happened last Pesach. A kid opened up a drawer, took out a ladle, chametz stick ladle, dipped it into the soup. Come on, it's Einu Ben Yomo. It's post 24 hours. Sorry. That's not okay. I can't be mevatel then. I can't rely on the halachos of no Saint Tam Lifgam, of Einu Ben Yomo, when it comes to Hilchos Pesach. Because of everything we've been speaking about. Because number one, there is no bittul on Pesach. Chametz is asur b'mashu. And it could be that no sin tam lifgam. It could be that the din, again, I'm throwing around these terms, but I'm going to translate. But the post 24 hours expiration idea is only true when nullification is a halachic concept. The rest of the days of the year. And if it's predicated off of nullification, off of bittul, so then that can't apply on Pesach. So that's going to change everything. That's going to change many situations that even though our general approach is, come on, it's post 24 hours. It's actually, totally no sin tam lifgam. That's something that's not going to affect the food at all. That's not so clear that you can rely on that on Pesach. And that's the way we paskin. So therefore, we do not rely, and if a person uses any chametz kelim, this is important, if a person uses any chametz kelim, even if it's after 24 hours of use, that is going to have an effect on our food, and that is going to be problematic. Okay? There's another, give me 1 second, Sabrina, I just want to finish this point. There's another area that this really affects. And I just got this shaila from someone in Queens. The Rav called me up and asked me this, the following issue. He wants to know if a person could potentially kasher on Pesach. Say for whatever reason they didn't have the ability to, or they're going somewhere else, whatever it is, person wants to kasher on Pesach. So what do you think? Can you kasher on Pesach? No chametz, right? What's the issues over here? So it might depend on the process and the procedure of kasher. Because you have to really think about every time you kasher when you're dealing with hagala, right? So we didn't really learn about this so much, but there are really two methods of kashering. The two fundamental methods of kashering are what's called Liban Gomer, and the way the Rishonim explained to that is you take a fire, like classically, which no one should ever do, but you would take a blowtorch, and you would, what the Rishonim say is Soref Es Mekomo, you would put the blowtorch on that area which had a treif absorption, and you would burn it out. That's called Liban Gomer. That is usually used in areas where there was no liquid medium. There was no intermediary in the absorption process. When it comes to bishul, when it comes to something that's cooking in a liquid medium, so then you're not going to need libun, then you're going to need hagala. Libun would apply to, frying pans, anything that was grilled or barbecued, that would be something that's really straight up on the fire without a liquid medium, and that would need libun, just like the fire created the absorption. So too kibolo kachpoto, so too you're going to need libun gomer, and classically we assume that that's going to be the self-cleaning oven. That's universally accepted as a classic Liebengummer Hechsher process. But then there's that other method. That other method of Hagolah. What's Hagolah? Hagolah is taking the liquid medium that that was used in the absorption process, and now to try to, what's used in Chazal, to be polate. What does it mean in Halacha to be polate? To spit it out, right? You absorbed it, so now we're going to do the same thing to spit it out, right? There's a tray for kli, there's a tray for pot, a tray for spoon, a tray for fork. I'm going to put it in that bubbling, rolling boil water, 212, and now I'm going to cause that blia to come out, right? So now, how does that help me? So now the blia came out, right? Oh, so you make sure the second that the blia came out, you make sure you dive yourself into that pot and you get that item out before what? Before it has a chance to absorb it again in that bubbling water. How do you do that? That's crazy. Who has the ability to know the exact second that, honestly, most people think I'm crazy to even talk about this, that there's something coming out of this piece of metal that's spitting out, and now that's potentially going back in, and you're going to know the exact second to be able to stop it to make sure it doesn't reabsorb. So does anyone know how we resolve that?
Bito.
Not necessarily bit. Okay, bitos. So one, that's one option. So if, Serena, if you have an item to make sure, and you measure that every time that you're going to have a hagola, you're going to make sure that there's going to be shishim going against any iser that was absorbed into this vessel, which, by the way, I have no idea how much absorption was in this vessel. I never was able to measure inside the vessel. I don't even know what this looks like inside my spoon. You know what this is. So you're right. In theory, you could have, you could have it. I guess you would say, no, if you have 60 times the amount of the entire pot, or the entire vessel, then you can know for sure that would take care of the nullification. What's another way? What's another easier? Oh, that's another suggestion.
That's more practical.
Much more practical. Much more practical is that you don't have to worry about the size. You don't have to make sure that you have 60 times more the amount of the item that's prohibited. But rather, what do you do? Just wait until the item is what? Is no Saint Tom Lefgam. Yeah, the item, the taste came out. The taste came out. But you know what, Rabbi? I can relax about that taste that came out. You know why? Because it's ain't no Saint Tom Lefgam. That taste is something that's not going to affect anything anymore. That taste is not a problem even in my food. Really? Is that true? Does that work with the rules and regulations of bittel, of nullification? Or does that work on its own? So that might connect back to what I just spoke about. Whether or not no Saint Tom Lefgam is something that could be relied upon on Pesach. Do the rules of no Saint Tom Lefgam of this bad taste coming out of the vessel, is that predicated off of Bittel, or is that just, no, that it's a spoiled taste and it never affects anything in the first place? That will be our question. So now we're going to have another question. Can I kasher on Pesach, Rabbi? I'm going to, to another house, to another hotel, to not a hotel because I'm not cooking there. I'm going to a program that I'm going to be cooking. And now I want a kasher. So can I kasher or not? So if you're going to do Liebun Gomor, so then no one said you can't have fires on Pesach. No one said you can't take a blowtorch and burn out your vessels on Pesach. That technically you could do, as long as what you know that you're doing is actually a valid Liebun Gomor, or you're putting on the self-cleaning oven, and that's on autopilot, that's going to be burning out the item. So that would be something that's mutter on Pesach. However, if it comes to Hagolah, and Hagolah might be based on the fact that this item is post 24 hours, and therefore the absorption going back in is not going to be a problem, that can't be done on Pesach. That's too late. So now you're going to have to bring your pots and pans. The pots and pans that need Hagolah, so that's going to, that I shouldn't say pans, because pans usually need Liebun, but pots, you know, frying pans sometimes. But those things that need Hagolah can't be performed on Pesach. But again, it's all based on the system. It's all based on the logic. It's all based on you know, it's not just random rules. It's all, it all connects, and it actually makes a lot of sense once you put all the pieces together. Just to take it one step further, I don't want to go too long because we learned a lot of new concepts. But this also affects the rules and regulations of kashering. When it comes to Hagala, like we just said, we will always tell a person before you kasher, wait 24 hours to do the Hagala process, right? And that's why when a person's kashering their sink, like I mentioned beforehand, that you're suggested, and sometimes it might be even advisable to turn off the hot water, what's the word I'm looking for, underneath the sink? The hot water...
Valve,
thank you. The hot water valve underneath the sink, that it's not possible to have hot water within the 24 hours, and that kid is not going to climb up and turn on the hot water, even though he's not allowed to, and you don't have to mess. And here, it's not just, oh, you turned on the hot water, you're going to get a boo-boo. Here, you turn on the hot water, you know, you messed up my whole koshering, and I don't have enough time before Pesach to kosher now because, so that's advisable. But what do we always, you know, tell the people before koshering? If you're going to do Hagala, so then you got to wait 24 hours. You got to make sure that any taste, any absorptions are going to be no sin tam lifgam before they come out. Obviously, in the koshering process prior to Pesach. But that's not necessary when you're doing a self-cleaning oven. That's not necessary when you're doing Lieb and Gummer, when you're taking the blowtorch and you're going through a totally different method of koshering that's nothing to do with spitting out and going back in and reabsorbing and relying on no sein tam lifgam. This whole idea is actually relevant even before Pesach, just within the koshering stages that we see that that these fundamental principles exist already in the difference in the rules or regulations when it comes to the koshering process. So what happened in this situation of the sink? So we had to, when it was coming, it was approaching towards Pesach, and the hot water was used. So we had to be mitzarif a few different shitas, and one of them was the Rabbeinu Tam that allows for linas laila, and that says that even if it's not 24 hours, but if it, you know, it stayed overnight after the person used it, that's okay. There were a few other tzirufim. There's a long shach that discusses this issue that we were makel about, and maybe we'll have the ability to talk about a third tzad lahakel that we were makel about, which relates to Basi, what you brought up, not bar not, and how that relates to the world of chametz. So really, I'd like to talk about that if we have time in the next class to really just discuss some of the differences and the unique halachos that pertain to not iser per se, but like Basia pointed out, fleishiks, milchiks, which is not necessarily usser, and how that relates to the laws of Hilchos Pesach, and how it either differs or it doesn't apply when it comes to the laws of Pesach, and maybe we'll touch on that, some of those principles, when it comes to next week, and try to touch on some of the relevant halachos for this year Pesach specifically. Okay, any questions?